Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. Today, we're going to talk to somebody. Actually, I don't really think we've ever had anybody like Ben Jones on the podcast. He's the Managing Director and Head of Intermediary for BMO Global Asset Management. He is coming to us from Park City, Utah, but they also have offices in Chicago. So Ben, before we really kind of dive into to who you are, what you do, and why you do it, tell me, What does this title mean, and help us understand what you do for BMO, if you don't mind?
Yeah, no, that's great. I appreciate it, Matt. I have the privilege of leading a team of sales and service professionals around the country who deliver BMO Global Asset Management's investment solutions to intermediaries. And those intermediaries could be registered investment advisors, they could be broker dealers, they could be platforms, or in some cases, they could be other investment managers that use our solutions as a sub-advisor to the solutions they deliver to their clients.
So how did you get to this? Tell us your history. I mean, was this like your life's goal? I'm going to be a BMO guy.
You know, finance found me versus me finding it. I have to say, I feel like one of the luckiest guys on the planet in that the whole idea of going to college and figuring out what you want to be worked for me. In that, I took a finance class my sophomore year of college called Personal Finance or Introduction to Personal Finance. And I learned about the rule of 72 and investments, and I was hooked. And at that point, I knew that I wanted to do something in finance, and I got the opportunity to be an intern at Northwestern Mutual up in Milwaukee. I interned there, which was a really great learning experience, and then started working in financial services as an benefits consultant, working with small businesses to help them with their corporate benefit plans and retirement plans. Then had the opportunity to go work for Russell Investments, which was the largest, institutional pension consultant in the world at the time, and had the opportunity to lead their defined contribution business. And really, at the end of the day, the thing that really drew me to financial services is the thing that keeps me motivated today at BMO. And that is that when financial services is done right, it's really a noble profession. And you get to help people be more successful than they otherwise would have been on their own. And I think, the opportunity to help normal working Americans secure, financial freedom, to secure dignity in retirement and live the retirement or financial life that they want is really something that keeps me highly motivated and excited about the work that I do.
Well, let's talk about what you're doing to get the word out. This is a marketing-focused podcast, and I like bringing on people who work for organizations because a lot of times what the organization is doing is a little bit different than what like an independent RIA advisor would be doing. And I think that a lot of the advisors can learn from organizations like you because you guys have a lot more data and a lot of times a lot more resources to be able to try things. So what are you doing right now that you feel is the most powerful way to get the word out about who you are, what you do, and why advisors should pay attention?
I'd just add on to that in that while what we do as an organization might be different than what a financial advisor does in thinking about getting the word out for themselves, the process itself isn't that different from the way that an advisor should think about getting their message out. And so I had the opportunity to come to BMO, and when I joined the organization, our intermediary distribution in the U.S. was fairly new in taking our services out to third-party intermediaries. And so we got the opportunity to build our value proposition to intermediaries from the ground up. And so just like an advisor, the first thing we did is we said, where are the places in the market that we think that our services and solutions will resonate best? And, you know, we determined that the registered investment advisor, the independent advisor, is really the place where we had the most opportunity to add value. And the way that we decided to add value was really based on a core belief. And that belief is that we believe that better conversations lead to better outcomes for advisors and their clients. And so we really seek to enhance advisors' conversations in three areas. First, ideas for their practice and their portfolios. The second is access to industry experts, being able to connect them to industry experts or portfolio managers so that they can learn from people who have a lot of experience with various topics. And the last is ease of use. And so being easy to do business with in both the tools and the contents that we create to help them. And one of the reasons that we came up with this value proposition and that it lives within our organization is that independent advisors and RIAs oftentimes don't have a centralized home office resource to help them with things like practice management or marketing or, you know, compliance or portfolio construction. And so we really felt like this was an opportunity for us to bring the weight of our resources to financial advisors and really add value to them beyond just a product or an investment solution.
So with those three things, what are the mediums in which you use to make advisors aware of being able to take advantage of what BMO has to offer?
Well, first of all, we made a conscious decision to focus on content. And so you've probably covered the topic of content marketing. It's something that I think people have taken on in various different mediums, whether it's the written word through blog, through white paper or academic research, through video or through radio. And for us, given the fact that we focus on, you know, better conversations, we felt like podcasting was a natural fit for that genre of information. And so what we wanted to do was be able to provide people with really actionable content that they could fit in on their commute to work or their way home so that they can make use of that interstitial time and provide them with ideas to help propel their practice in various different aspects of wealth management.
Well, it's probably wildly transparent that I happen to be a huge fan of podcasting as a medium.
That's shocking. Shocking.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy, isn't it? And it's always wonderful, by the way, Ben, to have somebody who podcasts on a podcast because you're a known commodity. And I know that you're not going to be a wild card. And a lot of the funny mistakes that people make, you don't. In fact, I was just on another person's podcast this morning. And it was really weird, by the way, being on this side of the mic, like where you are with me right now, because I'm usually hosting it. And I know you are too, right? So, you know, it's fun to be able to probe a podcaster's brain a little bit. But let's talk about the reach of the podcast. And, you know, are you directly mailing links to the podcast? Are you talking about the podcast when you're out and about? How are you raising awareness for this medium that you've chosen?
Yeah, no, I think that's a, you know, Matt, I think that is the most important question. But before I get into how we market the marketing, if you will, let me talk a little bit about, you know, kind of the way that we have thought about the content itself. The first and maybe most important thing is that when we create content, we want it to be valuable to the listener and cover topics relevant to the work that they do. And we also do not want that to be any sort of product related or pitch related type of, you know, interview. And so what we do is we spend a lot of time trying to think about what are the takeaways or the things that someone could walk away from this and put into practice every day. So first and foremost, if you want to get the word out about your content, focus on the content. Make it good and valuable and usable for the listener. Then once you create the content, you know, in this case, a podcast, I think the first thing that I would, you know, say from experience is that, you know, the idea that you put a podcast up on Apple Podcast and all of a sudden thousands of people are listening to you is a fallacy. I think with all content marketing, you have to first focus on creating great content. The second step is then you need to focus on marketing the marketing. So how do you make sure that you're getting the content into the hands of the target audience and making sure that then you're engaging that audience on an ongoing basis? And so what we did is first and foremost is we tried to cover topics that were really important and relevant at the time that we launched the podcast. We then had our field force, our internal resources and advisors go out and tell their clients about the ways that we intended to help add value to the work that they do. And we shared with them links to it. We shared with them, in many cases, what we found. And I'm sure you've had this experience as well, Matt. The average age of an advisor is not the average age of a podcast listener. And I think for us, given that we were targeting advisors, one of the things that we learned is that in many cases, we were their first podcast that they listened to. And so our regional directors would be out in their office and tell them about it. And they'd say, boy, I'd really like to learn about it. How do I download a podcast? And so we actually created a guide into how to download a podcast on, you know, Apple podcasts, on Google Play, on Stitcher, et cetera, just to make it easy so that the advisors could get access to the information. And in doing that, they not only found our podcast, but we really opened their eyes to the world of podcasting, which added, I think, in many cases, a lot of richness to their commutes and to their lives.
Absolutely. I have been really surprised. In fact, I just spoke at a networking event for a friend of mine yesterday, and there was a woman who was probably, you know, the average age. So what average age of a financial advisor is just sub 60, right? So it's like 59 and a half or something like that. And she was right around that age frame. And she said, Matt, I don't even know what a podcast is. Yeah. It was like, ouch. But I did the exact same thing. I walked them through, she was on an Android phone. So I showed her how to go to the store and get a podcast app and a player and blah, blah, blah. She could have also just done it on Google Play or do it on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, whatever. But once they cue into it, and Ben, this is my favorite thing. Once you get them just a little bit paying attention and hooked onto this medium, they become total junkies, right? So, my clients who are now podcasting, they all listen to a ridiculous amount of podcasts. And here's the best thing. There's a podcast for just about everything, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in fact, last year, 2018, not to date this podcast or make it not evergreen, but last year I made the goal that I wanted to listen to 52 new podcasts, one a week, and just expand my mind a bit, listen to some things that maybe I wouldn't normally listen to. And I was blown away at the ease at which I was able to do that.
Mm-hmm. What do you listen to? I mean, what are the podcasts? What are your go-to podcasts?
Well, I think there's a lot of different go-to podcasts that I have. I do probably, like you, listen to a lot. And it depends a lot on the amount of interstitial time that I have in a week. So mm-hmm. Am I going to be commuting, you know, an hour? Am I going to be, walking 15 minutes to a meeting? Am I going to have, downtime while I'm gardening or riding my bike? And so I think the time really dictates what I listen to. But some of my go-to podcasts are probably not that different from some of your listeners. I think one of my favorite, I'm a kind of a finance and economic nerd. So I love Econ Talk with the Library of Economics. I love to listen to, NPR, How I Built This, as well as Planet Money. Work Life with Adam Grant, I think, is just a really well-done podcast as well. And I also really enjoy listening to Masters of Scale with Reid Hoffman.
I just wrote those down. I've heard of a couple of those, but that's what's so much fun about asking that question, Ben, is, what you're going to be exposed to is different than maybe what I'm going to be exposed to. And for me, I love stories. So I'm more focused on story-based podcasts like The Moth and things like that. Those are ones, but I do the exact same thing. And I want everybody to understand that time point that Ben just made is so important. If I'm on a long, long trip, I will binge listen to a singular podcast, right? So if I'm driving to Chicago or Detroit or Columbus, Ohio, or anything like that, I will pick one podcast and listen to as many as I possibly can. But if I'm just zipping across town and I know that I've got 20 minutes or 15 minutes, I will find a 15-minute podcast. So making it so that you have a nice bullpen of different things that you want to listen to is really great. One of the things that I've heard that frustrates people, Ben, is they pull into their driveway and the podcast still is like 15 minutes. And they don't want to pause the podcast because, you know, they're so focused and so into it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I try to, you know, not do that as well, because you never want to listen to the last 6 minutes of a podcast later.
Yeah,
I think that's just human nature. By the way, on the story topic, I mean, one of my favorite story podcasts is 99% Invisible. I think they tell amazing stories about design.
Yeah.
I do want to just, you know, make the point, though, is that oftentimes, you know, we can have so many inputs into our, you know, mind, whether it's, you know, the content available with podcasts or papers or articles or newsletters. And there's so much coming in that we don't take time to just sit back and think about how that applies to our own lives, our own business, our own practice. And so I personally try to, if I do listen to a podcast, say for 15 or 20 minutes, or maybe I went on last night I went on an hour long mountain bike ride. I listened to a podcast. I try to just sit in silence, you know, or take some quiet time while I'm, you know, putting my bike away or whatnot, and just jot down some of the things that I took away from that may have application today, may have application in 10 years or 5 years, but just write down those things so that I get some utility out of the information that I just listened to.
Yeah. I also like to listen to something that has absolutely nothing to do with who I am at the present moment to just force my brain to think differently. I listen to an algorithm podcast and I don't understand 90% of it, but it forces me to pay so close attention to what they're saying. And I take notes too. There's a couple of philosophy podcasts that are out there that are a whole bunch of fun. A lot of time giving yourself that mental break from where you're so focused for so long can really make a really big difference. I have one more question about the podcast. And then Ben, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you some questions about who you are as a human being. You just told us a little bit about some of the stuff that you do in your free time. I'm going to highlight some of those in a minute. But how long did it take for your podcast to get legs, for people to really start tuning in? Because I think people have an unrealistic expectation, much like you said, I'm going to record a podcast, put it on iTunes, and I'm going to get, you know, a million listeners. How long has it taken for your ramp up to really start getting the attention that you've wanted?
You know, I have a lot of opinions on this, and a lot of them are curated from other people who have much more experience than me, but that I've found to be accurate. And so now I find myself regurgitating some of the things that they told me that I didn't believe when I started. To the extent that you go out and decide that you're going to embark on a content marketing journey, my suggestion is that you plan at a minimum to do something consistently for at least 6 months and maybe a year, depending upon, you know, how niche your market is or how dispersed your target audience is. And what I mean by that is, you know, you will go out and put out your first piece of content. You need to pick a consistent delivery of that content over time. So for us, we release an episode every other Wednesday so that people know when they can expect to see something from us. And we don't deviate from that. We may release a tweener episode here or there if there's something really timely or news related. But for the most part, every other Wednesday, you can count on seeing something from us. The same with our newsletter. You can see our newsletter comes on the last week of every single month. And so we try to be really consistent in that because it creates an expectation with the audience that they're going to hear something good from you at this time frame. one of the things that I think people do wrong with content initially is that they're really inconsistent. And so people are unsure when or what they'll hear from someone over time. With respect to our podcast, if it's okay, Matt, just maybe take two minutes and explain something. And I'm a little embarrassed about this now. So, you know, now that thousands of people are listening, I'll just embarrass myself a little bit more. When we initially started this podcast, we had done basically, you know, much like many other people, as you get speaking opportunities at various events or whatnot. And at sometimes they're paid, you know, speaking opportunities. And when we looked at the economics of that, we thought, wow, we're paying X amount of dollars to reach X amount of people in the room, maybe 40 or 50 people. If we could, you know, take those same dollars and we could put those conversations out into the marketplace and put them on demand in the form of a podcast, and we got 150 or 200 people to listen to those every other week, we'd be way ahead as far as, you know, dollar spend to getting the message out, you know, related. Well, I'm really embarrassed about that number now, because, you know, to think about, you know, our goal was 150 people. In the first couple of weeks, we blew through those numbers. And so it's really a testament to the quality of the guests that we had on the show, the relevance of the content and the guests delivered to our audience, as well as, you know, our team, you know, telling the message out in the marketplace. And so today, you know, we reach people primarily in the U.S., Canada, the U.K., and Australia, but we reach people across the globe. And my favorite part about the podcast is that people engage with you in a different way, as you're probably aware, Matt. You get lots of emails about, would you cover this topic, or what do you think about this, or thanks for sending this, or, you know, there's the occasional, that was terrible, you know, but, you know, the neat thing is that the audience creates a real connection with you.
Yeah. I really agree with the numbers that you had given. Since we have our clients focus on a very specific niche, it does take more like 12 months. You know, we want them to have, you know, 12 to 18 pieces of content in the can in order for them to, you know, have some good thought leadership, because people binge. And you also said, you know, you release every second Wednesday or every other Wednesday. We support that 100%. That is exactly the direction that we have all of our clients go, because people do like those clear expectations. Okay.
So it's okay, Matt, I'm sorry to just jump in, but one thing that maybe I didn't say is that if people are patient and they're consistent and the information they put out is valuable, there will be a day, and whether that's 6 months or 12 months or 16 months, when all of a sudden you realize it's working. Yeah. And you have people coming inbound to your website, to your email, calling in, asking questions. And so it does feel like there is a tipping point that is reached, and it's a different, you know, whether it's 6, 12, or 18 months. For those people who are consistent with this, I think everyone I've ever talked to who has done something like content marketing acknowledges that they hit some tipping point, and all of a sudden it was just like, oh, wow, this is working.
Yep. Amen to that, brother. We ended up, we were way slower than you guys. I mean, I think we were 8-9 months into our podcast, and then all of a sudden that's really when things clicked. And Kirk and I have a huge network. But as you had said, our ideal audience doesn't always listen to podcasts, right? They're not knee deep in podcasts yet. So hopefully we're changing that. Now, one of the things that you know as a successful business person is that people like to do business with people they like, trust, and have things in common with. And I think you've done a great job building trust with our audience about who you are, what you do, and your expertise, and the thought leadership that you provide to your audience and to the people who participate and who do business with you, and even some of the people who don't do business with you yet. But I want to now give everybody an opportunity to find out a little bit about who Ben is, what makes you tick, and what you do when you're not, you know, hardcore working. Is that cool?
Yeah, that's great. Let's try it.
All right. So when you're not working, what do you do for fun?
You know, I like to spend my time outside in the great outdoors. And the things that occupy my time are mountain biking, skiing in the winter, gardening, hiking, and outdoor activities with the kids. And I would say that, you know, one of the things that I find that is kind of a commonality in things that take my time away from work is I like to build things that, you know, have an end result, whether that's, you know, building a nice space in the garden or building a cabinet or, you know, whatever the project might be, because it's tangible. And a lot of times the work that we do is somewhat intangible. So that's kind of a common thread.
Hey, you and I have that in common there, brother. Okay, who's your hero?
Who's my hero? Well, I'm not sure that I would use the word hero, but there are some people that I think have had, you know, profound impacts, and people that I read a lot of their work. And I think, you know, given that this is a marketing podcast, I really enjoy reading the way that Seth Godin thinks about the world, whether it's through his blog or listening or reading his content. So he's someone that I think is a person that I look up to and respect. I think in the investment world, I like the integrity that Warren Buffett brings, the integrity and simplicity of communication. So I think lots of people might cite him, but specifically, I really like the way that he conducts himself. And, you know, I think those are probably two people. I think one person that, you know, is not still alive today, but a person that had a profound impact on my life was actually that first finance professor that taught me about personal finance. And that I really feel like 20 plus years later, the trajectory of my life would be quite different had I not had somebody who really took a genuine interest in teaching me.
That's awesome. I wish more people hearkened back to the people who educated them in their lives and gave them the due that they deserve, because you know, they're wildly influential. And that's absolutely fantastic.
I had a really neat opportunity last year with Financial Planning Magazine to, when he passed away, to write a note about mentoring and the power of teaching.
That's awesome, dude. Huh. If you had all of the money in the world that you ever needed, what would you do?
Well, I think, you know, a personal mantra here at the Jones household is sharing our passions with others. And so for me, money would really only enable our ability to share the things that we really enjoy with more people and create a lot more shared experience. So, you know, financial literacy is an important near and dear thing to my heart. The trail system here in our local town is something that is growing in importance in, you know, my wife and I's interests. And I think, you know, the ability to share, you know, a meal, share time, and share interest with people who might not have those same opportunities where they live, it would probably just increase the frequency. I don't know that it would be something that would cost a lot of money, but it would give me the time to invest in sharing those passions with other people.
Favorite person in history and why?
Favorite person in history would probably be Theodore Roosevelt. And the reason is that I think he did some really bold things that were really unpopular at the time that 100 years later look like they were brilliant. And I'm referring, of course, to the national park and national forest system.
When you think of the word success, one, how do you define it? And two, what does it mean to you?
Well, I think that this is something that evolves over time. I think that when you're young, the idea of success is usually equated to something like material goods, whether that's money or things. As you get older and wiser, I view success as having total autonomy over your time. And getting to choose how you invest and spend that time, with who you choose to invest and spend that time, when you choose to invest and spend that time, You know, time ultimately is the only non-renewable resource that we have. And the people that I think of most successful in life have figured out how, or they've come up with strategies or developed the ability to be very intentional with how they use it.
What is one thing that you recommend most to family, friends, or clients? So this can be a book, a TED Talk, a podcast, whatever.
Well, I think probably the, you know, if you asked friends and family, they may give you they may give you different answers. I think it would depend on the people. Probably the book I give away most is the Tickle Monster book and the Tickle Kit. And anyone you know, that has a new baby, that's a friend, family, colleague, we send that book to because it is a favorite at our house with the kids. So the Tickle Monster book is probably not an answer you've got before.
I was just going to say, Ben, I have done many of these and nobody has ever made reference to that book, but that's awesome.
Yeah. You know,
we'll put a link in the show notes so that everybody can go ahead and get a copy of that.
You know, laughter's contagious. And I think that it's, you know, if you can share the gift of laughter in a household, there's nothing more valuable.
Yeah. What's one thing that most people don't know about you?
You know, I really would struggle with this question, and I apologize, is that I feel like I'm a pretty open book. But I feel like whenever I talk to people, the thing that they find most surprising is that in my role and the work that I do, I have never, ever been on Facebook.
What? Holy moly. Wow. Okay. So that is two things that I've never heard on this podcast, the Tickle book and that. Wow. Okay. Wow. You and I need to have a little side conversation about that, brother, I think. Okay. Anyway, what is your mantra or motto or something you say to yourself to keep yourself focused and on track when things get rough?
The thing that I probably say the most, so I'm an active journaler. And the mantra that I've been using the most over the last year and a half or so is, I can choose my own, you know, destiny or my own outcome.
Good. Proudest achievement.
You know, I think, you know, I don't think that my proudest achievement would be something that I could point to any one thing. But the thing that makes me feel the most proud is when somebody, whether it's a friend, a family, a listener, a colleague, tells me that I really helped them achieve something that they wouldn't have achieved, you know, without my help or input or as an accountability partner.
Awesome. Well, you have the attention of a substantial amount of people who work in the industry that you directly work with. What do you want them to know about you? Do you have anything going on? Is there something they should subscribe to? How can they get in contact with you if they want to know more?
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost, if you want to reach out to me, you can follow my thoughts on LinkedIn or the old-fashioned way. You can reach me by email at betterconversations@bmo.com. But with respect to, you know, how they can, you know, listen or get some of the thoughts and ideas that might be useful for them in their practice, you know, our podcast, as I mentioned, comes out every other Wednesday. It's released on 22 different podcast players, so fairly easily accessible on Google, Apple Podcasts, etc. But I also write a monthly newsletter, which is kind of full of actionable ideas and content designed to be short and sweet, but really help them with their practice, their portfolios, and their planning. And so for those who are interested in that, you can go to the website, bmogam.com/betterconversations, and there'll be a sign up box that pops up. And love to hear from anyone listening to the show, hear what they think and what topics they might like us to cover in the future.
Well, Ben, thank you so much for sharing your wonderful ideas with our audience today.
Thanks for having me on the show. This has been a lot of fun and a very different to be on this side of the microphone.
I'll remember that, brother. Make sure that you check out the show notes so that you can get all of the links that Ben just talked about so that you can get in contact with them and find out a little bit more about who they are and what they do. Subscribe and subscribe to their podcast and the newsletter. Very, very important. You can never have too many good ideas. Well, that's not entirely true, but you know, you should go through and filter out some of the ideas that you're not using anymore and try something new and go ahead and sign up their newsletter and listen to their podcast. If you have not subscribed to our podcast, make sure you click that subscribe now button below. That way, every time we come out with a new podcast, or show up directly on your listening device. And if you know somebody who could use this podcast, please make sure that you share it with them. Finally, if you have not taken a second to give us a quick rating on iTunes or any of the players, please take a moment to do that. And we are always listening to your feedback on our podcast. So we love to have your comments and notes and reviews. And if you have any ideas for our podcast specifically, all you have to do is email me at matt@topadvisorm, and the M is for marketing. com, and we will talk to you about what you want to hear and also who you want to hear from. So for everybody at BMO Global Asset Management, Ben Jones, and all of us here at Top Advisor Marketing, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Are you ready to change the way you communicate with your clients? Are you tired of being the best kept secret in your area? Learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your business. Contact us today and see what the power of podcasting can do for your business. Click on the Contact Us link on our website at topadvisormarketing.com and set up a call to learn more. Follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook for more updates and information.
This was brought to you by Iris.xyz, a platform helping financial professionals become better in business and life through new media and new voices. Visit them and learn more at iris.xyz.